Session number 11763, Captain M.L. Crawford, Reel 1.
Captain Crawford, Reel 1, could you tell me first of all, please, how you came to be in the submarine service?
Well, I decided to join submarines after my midshipman's time in large battleship, where I found that little responsibility came to one, and therefore I thought a small ship where one would have a responsible job at all times was the best answer. And submarines just took my fancy.
When was that?
We had, after the midshipman's time, we did our sub-lieutenant's courses, and I'd volunteered by then for service in submarines, and immediately after my sub-lieutenant's courses, I joined Dolphin in April 1938.
Was the submarine service all you had imagined, or were there any disappointments for you?
I think it was all I had imagined, and of course, with the oncoming of war, we very soon found it had all that I expected, certainly.
What was your reaction when you heard that we were at war with Germany?
I suppose what most people's reaction was that one was naturally a bit fearful, but we'd been trained for the job, and it was just our job to get on with it.
Which ship were you in, and what duties did she have at the early stage of the war?
The submarine I was serving in at the outbreak of war was submarine Sea Lion, under the command of Ben Bryant, Lieutenant Commander Ben Bryant, stationed in Malta at the time.
Can you describe the duties of the submarine in the Mediterranean?
Well, our job, twofold really, prepare ourselves for fighting a war and be helping to train the anti-submarine, our own anti-submarine forces.
What was operating in a submarine in the Mediterranean like?
In those days, in the summer, it was extremely uncomfortable, naturally, because it was very hot and the temperature of the sea rose pretty considerably. No air conditioning, and so it was pretty sticky in the summer.
Can you describe the submarine as a... Was it as a typical S-class submarine?
It was the standard S-class submarine, yes, of about 700 tons, I think, from memory. Six torpedo tubes, and six reload torpedoes, and a gun.
What kind of a crew did you have?
The crew was, I think, about 55 to 60, including the officers. And we had a captain and three officers, three executive officers, watchkeeping officers, and an engineer officer.
What did you find regarding training our surface ships for submarine hunting?
Do you mean from the surface ship's efficiency point of view?
Yes.
Well, the Mediterranean can be quite a difficult area for the surface ships because in the summer months you get very heavy layers, density layers, which of course affect the AS transmissions from the surface ships, which of course help submarines in getting away. So I think they were pretty efficient on the whole.
Did you come into contact with the enemy at all in Sea Lion?
Well, by the time the war started, the depot ship for the squadron had already been taken away from us, and we were based on Manuel Island. And we left Malta in October to return to UK. And we had quite an interesting passage home, four submarines on the surface in keeping station through the Bay of Biscay, where, of course, U-boats were operating. But fortunately, we didn't see anything and weren't attacked, as far as we know. And we then returned to Harwich, where we operated across the North Sea off the Dutch coast, and then up to the Skagerrak and off the Norwegian coast in the later months of 40. Very little, in fact. The weather was the worst enemy at the time. It was bitterly cold. We did have one action against a U-boat when we surfaced to fire at it with the gun. Unfortunately, the sight setter set on the wrong range, and the shells just sort of literally dropped out of the barrel of the gun and fell pretty close alongside us, and gave the U-boat an opportunity to dive and get away.
Where and when was this?
This was off the Dutch coast, I think, from memory, just over on that side.
Do you remember the month?
No, I honestly can't say I can.
How had you come to surprise that U-boat?
Surprise it?
How had you come to surprise it?
Well, we obviously had surprised it, but what it was doing on the surface, I really can't tell you. Under those conditions, daylight, submarines don't normally play around on the surface.
And so your duties in the North Sea and the Skagerrak were just patrol duties?
Patrol duties, that's right. We moved up, you know, when the Norwegian campaign started, we moved up north off the Norwegian coast. We were once sent into the Skagerrak with the object of making our presence known so as to make certain the Germans would concentrate AS vessels in the Skagerrak. That was when they were running convoys across to Norway. And then we patrolled even further north, up off Stavanger, and we were actually out when we heard a submarine getting very heavy punishment, and on return to harbour we discovered this, of course, was the Shark, who was sunk off Stavanger. And it was during that patrol we were kept down for just on 45 hours, which was pretty uncomfortable in a small submarine in those days. We did just get up on the surface for about 5 minutes, but weren't able to start the engines, and therefore there was no change of air, and then had to plunge down again. And by the end of 45 hours, people were feeling pretty shaky and short of breath, naturally. We managed to preserve the battery power by sitting on a layer, density layer, and when you put the periscope up, because of the extra displacement, the submarine just rose up very gradually so that we could look around with the periscope, and then put the periscope down again, and the submarine sank back onto the layer. And we kept that up for about 15 hours, 20 hours, so saving all the battery power that we could. Because, of course, at that time of year, up in those, this was in the summer, there is virtually no dark at all. And so surfacing under air patrols was not very comfortable.
What do you remember next?
Well, then our last patrol in the Sea Lion was in August, where we went off the southern tip of Norway. And we were attacking a convoy and sad to relate, the captain didn't see a tug escorting the convoy, which managed to ram our periscopes. We then slightly broke surface before taking drastic action to get down. We had quite a heavy depth charging, but fortunately they didn't get us. And I think probably there was quite a lot of oil on the surface where the periscopes had broken away from the glands, and perhaps they just claimed us as a victory. We then had to creep back to Rosyth, deep all day, naturally, because we had nothing we could look out with, and got back to Rosyth, and were then sent down to Swan and Hunter's for a refit in Newcastle.
Can you describe what it was like being under depth charge attack?
Well, I think one has to be honest and say it's naturally very frightening, because you have no idea, apart from damage in the submarine, how close the depth charges are. I mean, you can hear a depth charge 500 yards away, and it can sound very loud. You can hear another depth charge which drops rather close and doesn't make so much noise. So it is very difficult to tell where the depth charges are going, except by the actual things coming off the bulkheads and that sort of thing, bits of equipment.
Do you think it's understandable that a tug like that can be missed by a submarine captain?
Well, yes, I mean, it obviously can be done. It shouldn't be done, but under the stress of the moment, with ships all around, it can happen, as indeed it did.
What happened to you after that, after August 1940?
Well, then we took the submarine down to Swan and Hunter's for refit, and I was relieved straight away. And I was sent up to join L-23 at Dundee, and then we were sent up to Scarpa Flow for AS running for the escort forces up there. And I spent 3 months in L-23.
How did that type of submarine compare with the Sea Lion?
Very antiquated, really, but a nice submarine, a very good submarine, and very adequate for the purpose it was being employed on. But I mean, they also did patrols as well, occasionally, when one had to send a lot of submarines out for a particular operation. The old boats and even the old H boats were called out to go and do a patrol. But a good submarine. Yes.
And after L-23, you went to the Upholder?
Then I was 3 months there, and then straight down to join Upholder on the 10th of December. And we sailed for Gibraltar on the 12th.
By this time, you were first lieutenant?
Well, I was first lieutenant of L-23, sorry, as well. That was my first lieutenant's job.
Was the trip to Malta uneventful?
Except that we had very bad weather down to Gibraltar and had a certain amount of damage, and we had to dock in Gibraltar. And then we went on passage to Malta. We spent a couple of days south of Sardinia and just west of the tip of Sicily, covering a force going through trying to deliver aircraft to Malta, and we were just acting there in case any Italian ships came out. And that wasn't very comfortable, because we were told to patrol with our wireless aerials exposed, which is not a thing that submarines like doing very much. But
what was the idea of that?
So that we could receive any enemy report from aircraft immediately and be able to move in the right direction to intercept.
But the Italians didn't come out.
Well, they certainly didn't come our way. I think they inflicted a certain amount of damage on Illustrious, was one of the ships, certainly, which was going to Malta at that time. Operation Excess, I think, was the name of the operation. And we then continued to Malta and again had to get a little dockyard repair work done. And we were put in the berth right next to Illustrious. And of course, Illustrious was prime target for German bombers from Sicily. And we were standing there on the bridge watching these Heinkel dive bombers and watching the bombs go overhead down towards Illustrious, which was quite alarming. And all we had was a little Lewis gun.
Any hits on either ship?
I think Illustrious had one or two ship hits, but nothing very serious. And we got away with it.
Did you have any contact with the Maltese population at that time?
Well, with the certainly with the dockyard personnel. I mean, one had very close links with them when we visited the dockyard for repairs. And very good they were, too. I mean, naturally, they were under orders to disappear to the shelters as soon as an air raid occurred. But they did what they could, and very good. Socially, I mean, in between patrols, we certainly met quite a few Maltese. Yes.
Under what circumstances?
Well, they're just going to their houses, meeting them in the club. The two clubs were still going at that stage. This was, where are we, beginning of 41, but the bombing was building up.
So they would invite you to their homes, would they?
Oh, yes. They're very friendly people.
Did they say anything about their attitude towards the war? Or to the belligerents?
Of course, by this time, Italy were in the war. There are a lot of very pro-Italian Maltese there, but, I mean, I think they were all pretty well known and were either rounded up or watched. I think they were certainly all very anti the German entry and were very keen to support us to the hilt, which they did.
Can you tell me what happened next in, as your memory serves you?
Well, we then started patrolling on a regular patrol basis, and I have to say that Upholder's early patrols were not particularly successful. We got a hit, I think, on the first patrol, and then we had several patrols where we fired a lot of torpedoes but failed to hit anything. And this, of course, is under Lieutenant Commander Wanklin, who later was one of the top scorers of sinking. But he had a rough time. Why? I don't think anybody knows, really. Possibly because we had to conserve torpedoes. I mean, we were under orders not to fire more than absolutely necessary. And at times, we only fired two torpedoes, whereas possibly if we'd fired three, one might have got a hit. But it's very difficult to tell. And he was under considerable stress, I think, from worrying about this, but he never let it show to us. We had minor success. I mean, we managed to turn a convoy around by firing star shell at it when we hadn't any torpedoes left. And this was a good thing because there was a destroyer striking force in Malta at the time, and it delayed the convoy, and I think they got out amongst it later. So that sort of success occurred.
Do you remember the details of that incident?
Well, I don't think there's a great deal of detail about it. As I say, we were on our way back to Malta, having fired all our torpedoes. We sighted this convoy, and the captain decided, right, let's try and make them think there's a destroyer striking force in the area, and so we'll fire star shell. Which we did, and the convoy did turn round, and we reported the convoy and continued on our way back to Malta. But I can't honestly be certain whether the destroyer striking force actually got that convoy later or not, but they certainly had a success against one or two convoys going down that strip of Tunis. And in fact, on one patrol, we were told to go and try and board a couple of ships, a destroyer and another ship that were stranded on the sandbanks there, because it's very shallow there. And we did this and approached the destroyer, and you go in trimmed down so that if you do touch the bottom, you can decrease your draft by blowing out the tanks and then get off. And we went aground long before we could get anywhere near the destroyer. So we then turned our attention to the merchant ship, and we did manage to get alongside her and put a boarding party on board, and blew up the safe and managed to get some papers out, and also collected a few souvenirs in the way of Tommy guns and tin hats and so on. And there were a lot of dead in the ship, and we then put detonating charges around and set her on fire while we withdrew. And we saw her burning well into the night as we got away.
Was this German or Italian?
It's a German ship, yes.
Do you remember the date of that approximately? Or the month?
Might be able to tell you. Probably the end of April or early May. It was about our fifth patrol from Malta.
So essentially you were trying to intercept the access convoys going to and from North Africa from Italy?
The whole job of the Malta, well, of all the submarines in the Mediterranean, was to stop supplies reaching the Eighth Army in North Africa, and the Malta ones particularly concentrated on the west coast of Sicily, down the Tunisian coast round to Tripoli, or on the eastern side if they came straight down from Taranto into Tripoli from the east.
So and presumably it was convoys going to North Africa rather than those coming from North Africa that you were interested
obviously
in.
Obviously the prime target was anything going loaded to North Africa, but any shipping, in fact, was a worthwhile target because there was only a limited number of ships obviously available to the enemy, and any that could be sunk meant less supplies would get through.
So it wouldn't have been a waste of a torpedo to sink an empty ship going back?
Not if it was one of any reasonable size, certainly not.
Any other specific memories of those days on the Apolda?
Oh, yes, many. well, one interesting thing was, I think, the captain of the submarine squadron, was ordered to eliminate Kesselring, who at that time had his headquarters in Taormina. And the captain of the squadron, Shrimp Simpson, who was a splendid man, discussed this with his COs, and Wanklyn immediately volunteered to take a commando and put him ashore. He said he'd spent his honeymoon in Taormina and knew the little harbour, little bay well, and there was a rock there which he could go up alongside and land the commando. And we'd got as far as, in fact, putting some padding around the bows so that, A, there would be no noise if we hit the rock, and also save damage to the submarine. And we were getting all lined up for this, and the commandos, I think, did a certain amount of practice in an old fort on Manuel Island of lobbing grenades. And just before we were due to sail for this, I think Kesselring decided he'd had enough in Sicily and moved elsewhere, so the operation was cancelled. But that might have been quite an interesting operation. Of course, one of the star attacks was in May, for which the captain was awarded the VC later, off the east coast of Sicily. We'd already had two attacks and only had two torpedoes remaining. Our ASDICs were out of action, so we couldn't hear things coming. And we were patrolling late in the evening when it was just beginning to get dark. I happened to be on watch and I just saw a dark shape, and so called the captain to the periscope, and he took over and did a most remarkable attack. And the citation for the VC really says it all. He had destroyers coming at him at very close range, but he managed to just dodge them and fired two torpedoes and sunk this 18,000-ton liner, the Conte Rosso, with considerable loss of life to the enemy. We then naturally had a pretty heavy depth charge attack after that, and you could hear the destroyer's propellers passing overhead. And naturally, instinctively, all the crews sort of bent their knees waiting for the crunch. But fortunately, we didn't suffer any damage and got away and were able to return to Malta. I think another remarkable attack before I left was in September, when we were recalled from shore leave in the middle of the afternoon. Four submarines were got ready for immediate patrol, and we sailed within a few hours. And this was based on an intelligence report that we had of a troop convoy coming down to the east of Malta from Taranto east.